From NPR News, it's All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Madeline Brand. It was an upside-down day in the global auto business. The world's top carmaker, Toyota, is extending an already giant recall to Europe and to China. Meanwhile, in beleaguered Detroit, there were actual profits. This morning, Ford announced its first profitable year since 2005. To make sense of all of this, we turn now to Frank Langford. He covers the auto industry for NPR. And Frank, these two stories, a one-day blip, something temporary, or is there something more going on here?
Madeline, there is more going on here. What you're seeing really is the global auto industry in flux. Let's start with Toyota. You know, Toyota won over a generation of consumers from Ford, General Motors, the other Detroit company, Chrysler, with quality. But in recent years, Toyota's been expanding really fast, and it's had more quality problems. Now it's got this mushrooming recall with faulty accelerator assemblies. Now it's millions of recalls, and the concern is some of these pedals seem to be sticking a little bit, not coming up quickly enough, and could cause accidents. So what Toyota has done is it's halted sales of 8 models in the U.S. It announced a recall in China of about 75,000 vehicles today, and it's planning a recall in Europe. Now, this is definitely going to cost the company probably billions of dollars, but more importantly, it's scaring consumers, and it's hurting Toyota's reputation.
So what is the company doing now to fix this accelerator problem?
Well, I've been talking to the company and also some sources, and they say the problem seems to be a mixture of wear and condensation inside the assembly, and it's kind of spongy. So when you take your foot off the pedal, in some rare instances, it doesn't spring up. Now, Toyota says it's actually got a fix for the problem. The company that made this accelerator is called CTS. It's in Indiana, and it started sending new accelerators to factories last week. But this is a recall. As I said, it's in the millions. So Toyota has to find a way for dealers to repair these things one by one. They're working on a solution, hope to find it soon, but then they have to share it with the government. And obviously, to do all these fixes, it's going to take a long time.
And Frank, beyond this current accelerator problem, what's been the story recently at Toyota?
Well, you know, the Toyota brand has always been about quality. I mean, that's why people buy the cars primarily, not because of the way they look. But a few years back, Toyota decided it really wanted to take aim at GM and become the biggest automaker in the world. Started building full-size pickup trucks, rolling out a lot of new models. But along the way, quality, for which it was really known, began to slip. And this is according to Consumer Reports. I mean, they've been watching this very, very carefully. And to give you an example, it got so bad that even last year, the head of Toyota admitted that the company had just expanded too fast.
Now, I wonder if there's any schadenfreude in Detroit. Are other automakers trying to take advantage of Toyota's problems now?
Absolutely, and very quickly. Both GM and Ford are offering cash back for some Toyota trade-ins. You know, the global auto industry is really a cutthroat business.
Well, let's turn to Ford then. The company had some good news today. It said it made nearly $3 billion last year. How did it do that?
Well, you know, before the recession, Alan Mulally, he's the Ford CEO, he mortgaged the company, borrowed more than $20 billion. And he used that to kind of weather the storm, all the bad sales that we've seen in the last 12, 18 months. And he also took the money to invest in new products. Well, now Ford has a good lineup of quality products coming out. They've been gaining market share. But, you know, as we began this conversation, as Toyota shows, fortunes can change really fast in this business. Ford does have a huge amount of debt. It's far more than GM and Chrysler, which were able to kind of get rid of a lot of their debt in bankruptcy. So one of the questions going forward is, you know, as Ford begins to pay off more and more of this debt, does it have enough money to continue to invest in product and kind of keep on a roll here?
Frank, thank you.
Happy to do it, Madeline.
That's NPR's Frank Langford. He covers the auto industry. The moment Steve Jobs uttered the word iPad yesterday, I thought, who came up with that? We joked on the program that maybe there weren't any women in the room when that got decided. And maybe they didn't watch this 2005 comedy sketch from Mad TV either.
Why use a maxi pad when there's the new iPad from Apple? iPad? With the new iPad? I just hook up my Apple to my peach. And I can download protection for up to 1,000 periods.
I like that.
And with wireless Bluetooth technology, iPad sets you up for fast uploading without all that water bloating.
Oh, wow, that's great.
That sketch has been all over the internet since Apple announced the iPad. The writers are here with us now. Bruce McCoy is here in the studio in Culver City, and Tammy Sager joins us from New York. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Where were you when you first heard that Apple had actually named their device the iPad?
You know, first thing yesterday morning, even before it was announced, I thought maybe someone leaked it. I saw it on the internet, I think on Twitter, perhaps.
Yeah, I found out from Bruce, actually, from his Twitter, because he tweeted a couple of minutes before it was announced that if it is called iPad, then he wants a residual check. And I was like, oh, this might be something.
And how did you two come up with this sketch?
Well, at Mad TV, we always loved puns. Some people think they're the lowest form of humor. Personally, I think they're the greatest source of comedy. And we were bantering around ideas. Someone said, oh, instead of an iPod, what about an iPad? And Tammy and I thought, what if we merged a iPod commercial and one of those horrible feminine hygiene product commercials? And the end result was the commercial for the iPad.
And also at the time that the iPod commercial was really big, right? It was on TV everywhere.
The big thing was the silhouette dancing at the end. And that was actually the trickiest thing we had to do for that commercial was explaining to the art department our vision for that. Bruce, I think you remember there were a lot of discussions of where exactly this device was going. And it actually contributed to our tagline for it, which was,
the new Apple iPad. Please don't make us explain how it works.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite parts is seeing those black silhouetted female, all-female dancers with the iPad.
Yes, exactly.
So you two worked on this together?
We did. This one we wrote rather quickly, which I think is usually a sign of a good sketch when it just kind of flows right out of you. No pun intended, I'm sorry. But, you know, it was kind of a silly idea. We could use as many puns about feminine hygiene products and computers as we could, and we crammed them into a minute and a half.
Apple itself, I think, is very spoofable, right?
They really are. We've done other Apple spoofs on the show, and as soon as we heard the name iPad, you know, everyone across the world, that's where your mind went to.
I think you nailed it when you said, oh, there must not have been a woman in the room when they said this, because it's just, it's so obvious. It's so obvious that we wrote it.
So obvious you wrote it 5 years ago.
Right.
All right. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bruce McCoy and Tammy Sager wrote the Mad TV sketch on the iPad. You can see it at our All Tech Considered blog at npr.org/alltech.
Some climate change skeptics explain their doubts by citing temperature trends. They point out that global temperatures have plateaued over the past 10 years. Well, now a new study has found at least a partial explanation why. And as NPR's Richard Harris reports, the answer is above our heads.
Global warming has not stopped. The last decade is the warmest since temperature record-keeping began, and 2009 was one of the warmest years ever recorded. But if you look over the course of the last decade, there is no strong warming trend in that time period. Susan Solomon at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in Colorado says that leads to an obvious question.
People very reasonably have asked me, you know, why is it that in the last decade, it just doesn't look like it's gotten that much warmer, even though CO2 has continued to increase and, in fact, has increased quite fast.
The short answer is there's lots of natural variability in the climate. Tropical ocean patterns called El Niños and La Niñas can have strong warming or cooling effects. The sun even gets slightly brighter or dimmer. And now Solomon pinpoints another cause in a new study. It has to do with vapor way up high in the stratosphere.
There have been some surprising changes in stratospheric water vapor that have really packed a wallop as far as surface climate goes.
It turns out, starting in the year 2000, a narrow layer of the stratosphere dried out quite rapidly, and water in the atmosphere traps heat, like glass in a greenhouse, so less stratospheric water means less warming.
It's amazing that the stratosphere, which is so far removed from the surface, can exert such a big effect.
In fact, Solomon calculates that the loss of water in the stratosphere has offset about a quarter of the warming that would otherwise have occurred.
I hasten to say it is not the whole answer, probably, to the reason why there has been so little obvious warming in the last decade, but I think it's probably part of it.
Solomon figures that the stratosphere is dry because there have been fewer towering thunderstorms in the tropics to push water up there. But Andrew Dessler at Texas A&M University says this is almost certainly a temporary state of affairs.
This can't keep cooling or offsetting carbon dioxide forever.
Not forever, since first, the stratosphere can only get so dry, and second, the weather patterns that cause the stratosphere to dry out are bound to change. So this is clearly part of a shorter-term variation in the climate. Dessler compares it to the gyrations of the stock market.
You've got sort of day-to-day or month-to-month ups and downs, but there's this long-term trend, whether it's going up and down, and that's really what you care about in the stock market and in the climate.
Still, it's very useful to identify the factors that drive the short-term ups and downs. That way you aren't fooled into thinking that a temporary change is actually part of a long-term trend.
You can often be confused with what looks like a trend that may go on for a long time but turns out not to be a trend. I mean, the housing market, that's the problem in a nutshell. People saw this going up. They thought it's going on forever, but it wasn't.
The long-term trend of climate change is obvious. The most recent decade was hotter than the 1990s. The 1990s were hotter than the 1980s, and so on. And Susan Solomon says the science behind that long-term trend is well understood, and water in the stratosphere is not driving it.
But it's really helpful and fascinating, I think, to better understand the ups and downs that may happen from one year to another, from one decade to another. There's a lot more that we need to understand there.
Her new research, published online in Science Magazine, is a piece of that puzzle. Richard Harris, NPR News.